Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. This episode is brought to you by Mac Cameron and Josh Weinberg, two fine gentlemen who decided they were going to pledge some money to keep this show going. They went to patreon.com/creativecontrol and they decided they were going to pledge more than $10 each a month to this show. It's very kind. I really appreciate it, Mac and Josh, and everyone else who has thus far pledged to keep this show going. We are currently at, as I speak to you now, $291 and 44 patrons. That's pretty remarkable. The goal, again, is to get to $500 a month by the end of August 2015. If we can do that, show keeps going. No problems. Can't do that, might have a problem. So you don't want a problem, do you? Let's keep the show going. If you'd like, please pledge some money to the show. Go to patreon.com/creativecontrol. For a limited time, because there are very few of them left, I am giving people who pledge $10 or more a month a t-shirt. Just pledge $10 or more a month. Tell me which of the two designs I currently have that you would like and what size and where you'd like it sent. And I will send you a t-shirt, a Creative Control t-shirt. They're pretty snazzy. I like them. So there you go. Thanks for listening to this show and thanks for supporting it at patreon.com/creativecontrol.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
We have a fine episode for you today, but before I get to this week's guest, I want to say that, A, I'm not here. I'm resting on vacation, and it's nice. If all goes well, you're hearing this episode even though I'm not here. So there's that. I need a break from everything. I'm very tired. And nothing gets you going like a vacation with two small children. That's gonna... nothing but sleep for me. That'll be fun. No, it's gonna be fun. I'm excited. Just gonna relax, do some stuff. So there's that. I wanted to mention that. The other thing is, when David Letterman retired, some of you know, I talked about David Letterman quite a lot. I talked to people about David Letterman on the show, and it was cool. I have not really made... because I've been so busy, really, I haven't made too much mention of the fact that Jon Stewart is leaving The Daily Show. And as much as I love Dave, and he changed my life a little bit, I could say the same for Jon Stewart. But that show
The Daily Show with Jon Stewart is unbelievable. There's really nothing else like it. And he's leaving. And he's leaving this week. I can't even do anything on the show because I'm away. And I've planned some things, and they're good episodes. But I wish I could have spoken to some people about Jon Stewart, because he is that what he did with that show is remarkable, and he'll be missed. I watch it online every day, and yeah, it's a drag. So Jon Stewart, thank you for doing what you did, and we're losing so many great people on TV that have been doing stuff a long time. It's too bad. Okay, on to brighter news. Billy Gould of Faith No More is on the program to talk about their new record, Soul Invictus, and where they came from, where they went, where they're going, the creative process, lots of stuff. We talk about the way people consume music these days. I thought it was a nice conversation. You're going to hear a couple new songs by Faith No More on this record, on this episode, rather. And I can hear my daughter crying, so I don't know if you can hear that through the speaker thing, but that's my cue. This is myself and Billy Gould of Faith No More. This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening Mr. Holmes, The Overnight, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, and more. And at the E-Bar, Dazzling Dames Burlesque takes the stage on Saturday, August 8th. The Bookshelf is an independently owned cultural hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. For more information about their hours, listings, blogs, and accessibility, please visit bookshelf.ca. Is a musician, songwriter, and producer who originally hails from the state of California. Throughout his life, Gould has played in bands like Brujeria, Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine, Fear and the Nervous System, and more, and he also started his own label, Cool Arrow Records. But Gould's most impactful work to date is in the band Faith No More, an idiosyncratic and challenging subversive rock band he co-founded in 1981. After an 11-year hiatus, Faith No More reunited in 2009 and have toured the world sporadically ever since. This past May, the band released Soul Invictus, their first new album since 1997, and the first on their own imprint, Reclamation Records. They continue to tour over the next few months, including Canadian stops in Toronto and Montreal in August. And here to discuss some of these things is Faith No More songwriter, bassist, and founder Billy Gould. Hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, where in the world are you, Bill?
I'm in San Francisco for three more days before we head off to Austin.
Is that what you call home, San Francisco?
It is.
And what's it like living in San Francisco? Is it a nice place?
It's a nice place when the sun comes out three times a year. other than that, it is. It's changed a lot. I mean, there's a big tech industry here that's kind of, you know, put a big impact on the culture. You know, not always positively, but it's still a cool city.
I just finished reading the 33 and the third book about the first Dead Kennedys album. Have you?
Right.
Have you read?
No.
That? It's very.
I haven't.
It's written by someone who's an activist, and it's written from an activist perspective about what was going on when that band was making Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables.
Very interesting.
I had no idea the Harvey Milk thing, the assassinations, and
this city was out of control back then. And I actually moved up here. That was probably around 79,
I would
say.
Yeah.
I moved up in 81, so that was about 2 years after that. And this city was pretty much up for grabs around that time, at least where we lived. I mean, it was definitely a different place than it is now.
Hmm. Is it better now?
It's safer, probably. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there are more opportunities, I think. It's more expensive. I wouldn't say it's exactly better. It's just different.
Okay, that's fair. And you can't wait to get out of there and head to Austin.
Well, yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, I don't think I've been to Austin in 20 years. It'll be great.
Oh, nice. So this is the band's playing a big show, some kind of show?
Yeah, we're playing. Yeah, I mean, we're doing a tour. I can't tell you the name of the venue right off the top of my head, but it's in Austin, downtown Austin. And it's going to be a show. Last time we played there, I think it was 97.
Yeah, this brings me to essentially my first question. How active has Faith No More been since reuniting in 2009?
Well, it's kind of weird to think that's already 6 years away from now, but pretty active. I think what we've done is we were doing tours every 3 or 4 months. So it wasn't like how we used to do it, where we'd go on a tour that could be as long as a year, a single tour. Now, we were doing like kind of 3 week blocks, but a couple times a year at least. And, for us, that was pretty active. Only in the fact that it was kind of a civilized amount of time where we wouldn't burn out and we still kind of enjoyed it, and it kept us wanting to do it.
Right. Now, I understand that it took some doing to get the band back together. What was it exactly that prompted you to get back together in 2009?
Well, I mean, this is a band of distinctly different individuals, and I think that everybody has different reasons to do everything. So I it's really hard for me to generalize, but I think it probably, you know, if I could put it in a way to sum it up, maybe you would say, why not? Everybody kind of thought, well, what is there to lose? And, you know, we had spent a lot of our lives together, and we do know each other really well, personally and musically, where, you know, it's kind of hard to talk to people when you've had so much experiences with somebody, to talk to somebody else about it and they don't quite understand. And I think we really do understand each other on a certain level, that it was kind of nice just to kind of be working together again.
So this is musical chemistry, but also personal dynamics. You guys just...
Yeah, I think it's both, yeah.
You're a family, essentially.
Yeah, for better or worse, yeah. isn't all the good and bad that comes with it. Yeah.
Isn't every family like that? It's not just...
Definitely. I think it's the definition of a family, really.
At the time, 2009, reunion culture was really in full swing. Some bands like the Jesus Lizard came back, and I thought maybe they were better than when they left the last time I saw them. How much internal pressure did you feel in getting Faith No More back out there?
Well, you know, I think that before we did it, I mean, mentally speaking, you know, people, with the band being absent, I think people get a lot of ideas in their heads on what this band actually was all about. And they create a lot of expectations that, you know, somehow we're supposed to live with. And, you know, dealing with that, and just because the music is so physical, being able to rise up and actually do it justice, I think was a bit of a, that was a concern of mine. But once we started playing, I mean, we were, like Jesus Lizard, we were better. I mean, we played better. They were better shows. It was really actually much more painless than I would have expected.
Did you experience a thing that, I don't want to put words in their mouths, but having seen the Jesus Lizard towards the end of their original run and seeing them play at a smaller crowd, smaller venues, did you feel like Faith No More was petering out when you stopped, or did you stop because of internal issues?
For me, I don't think we were petering out. I think actually we'd probably hit a trough about 6 months to a year earlier, and things were starting to build up. I think we just became very burned out with each other.
It was an interpersonal breakdown.
I suppose so. I think the this band had taken up so much of everybody's energy for so many years. I think people kind of needed to do things on their own.
Speaking of which, what did you do? I mentioned some credits in my introduction a few minutes ago. But what were you up to in between the band sort of ceasing and reuniting?
Well, the first thing I did when we split up was started a record label because I wanted to work with musicians and music. And I just didn't want to go through this whole thing of like trying to get a band back together again if it wasn't a natural thing. So I did that, learned a lot about a different part of the business that I probably wasn't that familiar with. And did that. I'm still doing that, actually. So that's been about 15 years and worked with really cool bands, international bands, bands from Bosnia, bands from Russia, bands from South America. Great, great experience.
Okay.
Produced a ton of bands during that time as well.
And are you then the force behind Reclamation Records?
I'm not, no. I mean, I know how the system works, but I think the Reclamation was something that I think the five of us had to do together, where we were all equals in it.
Right, because Mike Patton had also gone off to start his own label. Or labels.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's right.
So something, and then within the record, there's songs like Motherfucker that seem to be about the kind of label system, maybe. I mean, that's been one interpretation anyway.
Yeah. A little bit. I mean, we were always a little bit of an oddball band. And I think that, you know, I think it would be, it was probably back in the 90s and in 2000s, a challenge for anybody to really market us. Mm-hmm. But, one thing about doing this ourselves is we definitely kind of control the pace in which we work, and we kind of decide what's appropriate and what's not. And that's kind of the point, I think. Back then, I think we had to take what was given to us.
Yeah. You mentioned that Faith No More was something of an oddball band. They were always pretty difficult to categorize back in the day, but I find that there's a sense of that music consumption habits have really evolved since the 90s. They're always evolving, of course, and mm-hmm. it's not just mediums, but it feels like the general public is more open to challenging music. Do you think that's true from your vantage point?
I'm not sure. I don't know if we came out doing this kind of stuff now, people would get it any more now than they would have 20 years ago. I'm really not sure.
There's a sense, I think, that genres have melted down, though. This idea that, like, you could go, there's plurality. People are really, it's really, like, kind of cooler. Remember, I don't know what your upbringing was like, but there used to be kind of camps, right? You'd be like,
yeah.
I like rock, or I like rap, or I like jazz.
Right.
And there's this sense that orthodoxy is gone.
See, you know, it's funny. I get the opposite. I actually think it's more stratified and more rigid than it was back then.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, I just look at my record collection that I had when I was, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old. And I had reggae and dub and soul and punk and metal stuff. And now I feel like just with the way music is marketed, it's so niche based and it's so concentrated on certain categories that it's the only way to move product. And I think I get the feeling people kind of are more limited, actually, in their tastes. Well, I can be totally wrong, but that's the feeling I get.
You've been out and about and played some music festivals since 2009, I assume, right? Some bigger festivals?
Okay, you're right. This is a good point, actually. You're making a very good point. Yes, in festivals, there's a wide variety of different music all at the same festival. That's true.
There seems to be, and people seem to feel comfortable roaming from stages. I mean, I'm not trying to point to, I think European music festivals have had North American festivals beat on this for a long time, this idea of creating multi-genre.
Yes.
You would have done those too, right, in the 90s probably?
Absolutely. You know, yeah, and actually those are the most fun places to play, I mean, in a lot of ways. You make a really good point. That's really true. You know what is weird, though, is that, but then, you know, to take that a step farther, you know, if we're playing on a stage in one of these festivals where it's, Killing Joke is playing or Katy Perry is playing, and then, you know, we're playing. I've noticed that sometimes the audience can look at all three bands and think they're all the same thing.
Yeah,
like, that's a kind of a strange thing, too.
Right, so that's something about an aesthetic. Something's happening. I think you're right there. Now I think you're right. How about that, Bill? I was
okay,
right.
All right.
I think you're right. I feel like you're right. There is this stratification because people are viewing all music as just one
thing. It's just entertainment.
Yeah,
yes.
One
yes.
thing. Whereas it used to be if you were invested in a particular thing, you thought that was the best thing in the world and you would champion it. Now it's a glob.
Yeah, kind of. It, entertainment has a different value, I think, to people maybe than it did then. Yeah. But it's hard to say. I mean, I'm really speculating. I mean, our shows, we still have our crowd, and people that know our music from 20 years ago, and they want to hear our songs. So we're really fortunate there. But, you know, I just think about if we were a band starting now, I don't know if we could, you know, cultivate that or not.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It is that's true. I mean, you have a certain legendary status. I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable, but you're
no. Well, at least it's established, right? Yeah, we have a certain thing. We've planted our stake in the ground, and people know what we are.
Yeah. Have you been surprised by the reaction by fans or critics to this most recent spate of activity?
Pleasantly surprised. I mean, it's the first time we've ever put out a record, really, where people kind of seem like, especially with press, got it right away.
Mm-hmm.
All of our records, even the ones that did, even The Real Thing, which did really well, took a year to kind of get over the net. And it's always been like nobody got it when they first heard it, and it kind of grew on people. And right out of the can, this thing was taken very positively, and that was different for us.
From what I understand, you were the primary or one of the, well, yeah, I don't want to, again, you might deflect this, but my understanding is that you were the primary catalyst for a lot of these songs. Is that right?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I would say I probably was, yeah.
Now, what does that consist of? What did you do exactly? You wrote all the parts and brought them to everyone, or how did that work?
I wrote a lot of it. I've always been kind of a primary songwriter in the group.
Is that lyrically
as
well?
No, it's all this. It's like, you know, I kind of took on the production role as well, so it's kind of like, you know, sometimes it's like cheerleading as far as getting people excited, you know, things like that. Just kind of getting people to focus on, you know, potentially what we can do. And I don't know. I mean, I just every step of this process, I mean, we all worked and we all collaborated in a certain extent. But I was there for every step of those collaborations because I was kind of the constant in it. That's kind of how I contributed.
Are you guys sort of geographically separated at the moment?
Yeah, Mike Patton lives like a mile away from me, which is like definitely too far to walk on a normal afternoon.
Are you all centralized in the same area?
For a 52-year-old man. No, yeah, we are. Drummer, singer, and myself all live within about 5 miles from each other.
Okay.
Roddy moved to New York, and John actually lives in Oakland, so we're all pretty close, yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't as much file sharing over the internet to get songs?
No, not really. Okay. Roddy in New York, but he came out for like 10 days and we just, you know, we spent a solid 10 days just working on stuff.
Okay. Does the record, as the primary songwriter, does the record reflect anything in particular going on in the world or in your life or the lives of the band?
Probably. I mean, a lot of it is if it feels good on a subconscious level, you know, I've always noticed it always takes a while for the conscious mind to kind of figure out what it was that I was gravitating towards. And it usually was something, but I'm not really being retrospective about it yet. I'm still kind of feeling it as a living thing.
Yeah. It's only been out a few months now.
Yeah.
I hear that. It does seem like you've tapped into a certain amount of anger.
Well, yeah, anger. Yeah. But also, you know what it is? It's what I don't hear. When I hear music, there's so many things that I'm not hearing that are not getting me excited. And I'm trying to create the thing that can excite me that I'm not getting anywhere else. So sometimes it's anger because I think sometimes, you know, lately, I think the trend in music has been to be a little poppy and happy, and I'm not seeing any of the darkness that I miss in a way that kind of gives me a sense of reality. It seems more balanced, and also there's certain ways of writing songs and attacking songwriting that I find kind of fascinating, but I'm just not, I can't tell, think of anybody else who's doing it, so I kind of want to do it.
But it's not darkness for the sake of darkness, is it?
No, not really. It's darkness because, well, darkness to me and reality are kind of closely linked. I mean, I think that, well, I'm living in San Francisco and it's a very tech-friendly place. And there's a tendency with the way things are marketed and sold to people that there's this like kind of happy future we're living in where everything's really sugar-coated. And actually, having lived in the city for 30 years, you know, I've also seen how people have been displaced, how businesses are going down, and that's the kind of thing nobody wants to talk about. And that is a dark thing that's happening in this very shiny city. And it's the same with music. I think that, you know, there's a lot of things about people and people's experience and living in, you know, 2015 that's not all completely pretty. And you know, I want to connect to that.
You seem to obviously have a drive to express yourself, express certain perspectives. Do you recall what actually first got you into music and any kind of artistic expression when you were, you know, tiny Bill Gould?
You know, the first record I ever heard that was my dad's that made the biggest influence on me was John Lennon, Plastic Ono Band.
Man.
And that was a heavy record. If you think about it, I was probably, 7 years old? And it's like, okay, God was one of the songs, Working Class Hero.
Mother.
I found
mother.
Out. Mother.
The
mother.
The very first song is Mother.
So, yeah. Okay, so I'm a kid, so this is my experience to music, you know? It's all kind of like if it isn't hyper raw and hyper real, it's falls short.
This is something, how old were you when you heard the Plastic Ono?
Well, let's see, when did that come out? Probably 1972, maybe?
70, I think, yeah.
70. Okay. So 70, I was 7 years old.
7 years old and you're hearing that.
Yeah. I listened to it all the time. Not only did I hear it, I played it over and over for days and days and days. I mean, that was my record.
That's interesting that earlier you were talking about how people are putting such a pop sheen on things. I mean, arguably that record is very raw, but it's John still has this really, had this really innate sense of melody. So he's
absolutely,
he's creating these really heavy songs, but they're catchy.
Absolutely. I totally love that about it.
And that, do you feel like that informs your approach to writing as well?
It is. I guess so. I mean, I've never thought about it, but yeah, there's something about listening to his stuff that makes you feel good, even though it's not completely good stuff. Being able to do both, I think, is really a fantastic thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't set out to compare you to John Lennon on the show.
No, and I would never want to be compared to that. But just as far as an approach and kind of maybe, you know, if you're cooking with spices, you know, his approach to cooking, I really admire.
Yeah, no, he was good. I think most people would agree he was pretty good. Okay, no, that actually makes a lot of sense in terms of what Faith No More have gotten up to. You've worked with many other musicians and you've had other interesting collaborations. And we've touched upon this already, that it's a family dynamic. But what to you is special or unique about Faith No More? What did you miss about it when it wasn't happening?
Well, I think we're really different people that come from really different experiences, but we do share some things in common with amongst ourselves that we don't share with anybody else. And somehow it's kind of like on, you know, the potato truck, you know, like dump the potatoes. And we were like five potatoes that ended up together that actually are kind of suited for each other. And I don't know how it happened, but we ended up together. And there's just something about that and what we do when we're together and the humor that we put into it that we all kind of share and that I think is really unique.
Is this potato truck analogy something common where you're from? I've never heard this before.
Well, no, it's a really poor analogy that
I've just never heard anyone
say, the top of my
you know,
head.
It's like a potato truck falling over, and we just well, yeah, we're fine
you know,
potatoes.
Actually, okay, there was a bar around the corner from my house that was it wasn't the hippest bar in the world, and the way it was described was it's kind of like when a truck was driving and it hits a speed bump,
uh-huh.
And people fall off the out of the truck from the speed bump. The people that go to that bar were the people that fell off the truck of life. think I hit a speed bump and they ended up there while the truck is going. And we're kind of, I kind of feel like ourselves as people are kind of like that too. Like if it's a potato truck, we kind of fell off the truck and we're the ones that didn't quite go along with everybody else.
Do you believe then in fate?
I guess I could if I wanted to. If I was that interested in it, probably.
Well, it sounds like what you're touching upon is fate. Like you don't know why this.
Well, yeah, it's fate or randomness. I mean, you know, who knows if, you know, who knows when you throw some M&Ms on the ground, what colors are going to be? You know, if they could all be red, then, you know, it's coincidence too, right?
But you feel like this is clearly a special convention of dudes.
It's a chemistry. It's a very definite chemistry that happened to do with this collection of guys, for sure.
And you've obviously, any tension has long subsided. You guys are a functional working unit. Everything's going well.
No. That's total. There's always tension. Are you kidding?
Is it still weird?
It's not weird. It's just that we communicate better. I mean, we're the same people. We have the same chemistry. I mean, there's good, it's good and it's bad, and it's just a matter of how we handle it. And we are much better at handling it than before. We communicate much better.
Okay, no, that's fair. That's good to hear as well.
And that doesn't mean we don't like each other. We do like each other, but you know, we are different people.
Were you ever concerned that Faith No More was becoming like a business band? You know, like this is just a business we started and we have to.
When I was feeling lucky,
when the money was rolling in.
Yeah. If there was a potential of that, I would take it.
Was it? Did it ever feel obligatory? Like I guess we got to go do this thing.
Yeah, I mean. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. I suppose so, because, you know, we were on a major system back in the day. Mm-hmm. And the way to survive for music like ours was just to tour and tour and tour and tour. And that was how we paid our rent. So, yeah, that was a business in a way. Not 100%. That's a very complex thing. I could probably talk about it for about 20 minutes.
Right. And we don't have that much time. Okay.
Not really.
I hear you. I just was curious because, you know, I think part of the reunion, or as David Yao called it with the Jesus Lizard, I believe he called it he had a better name for it. Damn it. I can't remember what it is right now. Anyway, this puts everything in perspective, doesn't it? This puts, when you get back together, as you did 6 years ago, it really, the important stuff about the entity really comes to the surface. All the kind of crappy stuff just floats away.
Yes, but and also, I mean, the people this time really wanted to hear our music. It was a lot. It's just people knew the songs, even our weird songs they knew and they liked. And it's just a different experience playing when you're not always struggling to win every time.
Yeah.
And you can just actually sit back and enjoy it, and we could actually appreciate our own music a lot better too.
Nice. All right, well, you've made this record, and I know we talked about the fact that you're still processing it, but what do you have a next move? What's the next beyond touring? What's going on with Faith No More?
I'm just in touring mode right now. This, to me, touring with this music is like boxing. It's kind of like very physical and very focus based, I've tried to write on the road. I've tried to be thinking creatively, and I just can't do it. It just doesn't work for me. I don't multitask that way. So
how many
right now we're touring? We're touring till October, and we're going to see where we're going to go from there.
Okay, so you're not. Have you learned from your past experience not to predict the future with this band? Or
well, yeah. Well, more than that, not to commit to too much. Not to, you know, in the beginning, you know, we used to take every opportunity that came our way, and then we had to, you know, go through the process of years of playing through all those commitments.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we're kind of taking it. We do these tours that are like 3 weeks to a month at a time. And, you know, we complete them and then we check in with each other and see where we want to go from there. And I just think it's a lot more sane to work this way.
You sound like a very happy family, if I might say.
I think we're figuring some things out anyway, definitely. and the shows have been fantastic. Everybody's really focused. And so whatever it is we're doing, it's making it a better band, for sure.
I heard firsthand raves about the Toronto show you guys just played.
That was an awesome show.
I heard that it was particularly awesome. So
it was.
Yeah, and you're coming back. I want to tell people once again, the first Faith No More LP in 18 years is Sol Invictus. It's out now via Reclamation Records, and the band is on tour, including Canadian stops at the Ryko Coliseum in Toronto on August 7th and at Heavy Montreal on August 8th. Are you doing a bunch of dates with Refused?
We are. We're going from, yeah, the whole East Coast and up in Toronto and is with Refused.
And how did
and
that,
Montreal.
Is that just some kind of back deal, back door, like agent, same agent or something? Or do you like that?
Well, no, we did. We liked them. And also we knew we were playing with them at a couple shows already, like at this festival in Montreal. And we know they have a new record out and we just want to see what they were doing. And it just seemed to make sense. They had free time the same time we were booking our tour.
Oh, okay.
It seemed like a great thing to do. I've met them before. They're really cool guys.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's just seems like a nutty, amazing pill that is going on. So for more information, people can go to fnm.com. Bill, is there a song from the new record that we can go out on now?
Sure. What's your format like? What kind of stuff do you play?
Anything. Well, it's anything. It's
anything,
it's,
huh?
Guest choice.
Do Separation Anxiety.
Okay, why did that come to mind?
I like it right now.
is it going particularly well live and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, it is. And it's feeling good to me right now. I'm enjoying it.
Okay.
So.
All right, that's fair. This is Separation Anxiety by Faith No More. Bill Gould, thanks for the time and best of luck going forward.
Okay, sure.
Love.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region, at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.